Hello and welcome to another episode of
Trash or Treasure,
the podcast where Kim
and Amy
bring you spoiler-free reviews, recaps, sometimes recommendations for whatever we read that week. Amy, what did we read this week?
We read The Vanishing by Jane Anne Krentz.
Krentz? It's a K-R-E, but it, who
Krentz,
knows?
Yeah. By Jane Anne Krentz.
Correct. Excellent. And as listeners of previous episodes will know, or maybe probably knew before we worked it out, Jane Anne Krentz is the real author of who writes and as...
I think it's that's another, her real name. Another authorly name.
Yes.
For the author who also writes as Amanda Quick.
Yes. So she's Amanda Quick when she does Regency romance. When she does contemporary paranormal thriller romance, she is Jane Anne Krentz. So
correct.
We really enjoyed an Amanda Quick that we read a couple of weeks ago, and so I led the charge into paranormal contemporary thriller romance with Jane Anne Krentz.
Well, I would say that you went, we enjoyed it, let's try another one, because that's one of the things we've really enjoyed on this podcast is someone suggests an author and we're like, oh, we've never engaged with that author before. What else
gives
have they
us
done?
A whole bunch of new tangents to kind of explore.
So tangent.
So we explored this tangent.
And
we
now Kimberly is going to give us the spoiler-free recap. No arguments about this one. Go.
Thank you. So the story centers around Catalina and Olivia, who are two girls in their like mid to late 20s, and they run a detective like private investigation agency. They grew up together in a tiny little reclusive community called Fog Lake up in the mountains. And the important thing about Fog Lake is that there was some kind of paranormal research laboratory there, and
it led to an incident.
There was an incident, yes, where there was a big explosion, and from that point onwards, the residents who were there at the time of the explosion and all of their descendants have some kind of paranormal psychic abilities.
Yeah, and when we say paranormal, I think because we have just come off doing a whole bunch of Simone St. James, this isn't ghosts and it's not spirits and things. It's
no,
like it's auras and
it's
sixth
a lot
sense,
yeah, it's a lot
sort of
like
stuff.
Sixth sense, auras, premonitions, visions, that kind of thing, basically.
Rather than ghosts and
so these two
No vampires. That's the other I was thinking, what's the other part of paranormal? There are vampires. Zero vampires.
No werewolves or vampires. And so basically you go, when you're a person who is from or a descendant of the Fog Lake residents who were there for the incident, what kind of happens is you move back there when you have children. So no one kind of lives and grows up, like lives there forever, but you do move back because it's a community of people who all have the same, like have some kind of talent. And so as you learn to control your talent, as it kind of emerges, if you have any problems with your talent, blah, 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 it's a safe space.
Yeah.
So it's where you stay, but the kind of focus is on learning to control it and pass for normal.
Mm. Otherwise
you can't leave and go to the real world.
Or if you do leave, you're perceived as being mad.
Yeah, and you end up in
an institution
or something
like that.
The other thing to kind of mention is that this is the first in a series about the residents of Fog Lake and the different kind of offshoots of people connected to the paranormal organizations that are mentioned, like the secret organizations
is
mentioned.
It?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a lot of world building in this.
Right. But there's another thing that you didn't mention, though, which is...
Oh, no, I'm getting there. It begins with a prologue in which 14, 15-year-old Olivia and...
Catalina,
I mind blanked on her name, witness a murder in the caves at Fog Lake. But the caves are like a center of like a lot of paranormal energy. And even when you go in there, they make your talent be like majorly heightened and you see hallucinations and rah, 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 because the caves, it is suspected that's where the lab was many years ago. Anyway, so they witness a murder, but then the townspeople can't find a body and there's no physical evidence. And they pretty much are like, we think you didn't witness a murder. We think that the craziness in the caves made you guys hallucinate a murder. So calm down. So basically they accept that as the explanation and leave Fog Lake as grown-ups and go off to use their talents in this PI business. We pick it up when they're running their PI business, and Olivia, very early on, Olivia goes missing.
Yeah.
And Catalina wants to start investigating her abduction. At the same moment she's kind of doing that, Slater.
Correct.
Thank you. Slater arrives in San Francisco, where they're based, and he is from the Foundation. And the Foundation,
capital F.
Capital F. And the Foundation
investigates incidents. The capital, yeah, I.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a paranormal organization as well that kind of polices the paranormal community.
And they talk about having cleaners with a capital C,
yes,
who, if there's some sort of incident,
yeah,
go and
sort it out.
I picture, mm-hmm, like, you know, Men in Black, where they turn up and they say, look into this.
Yeah, exactly.
This,
yep.
Sonic screwdriver, please.
And it's kind of about keeping the paranormal community flying under the radar.
Yeah.
And if you're someone who is, you know, breaking the law or manipulating and taking advantage of non-talent people, non-paranormal people, then the Foundation might intervene and you might end up locked up in what they call Halcyon Manor, which is essentially like prison/asylum for people who've lost control of their abilities, people, yeah, who are a danger to themselves and others, things like, yeah, that. And basically people who the mainstream penal system wouldn't really know what to do with. So, yeah, so that's kind of, he turns up, he's from that. No one likes the Foundation. Everyone hates them. And he isn't there about Olivia. He's there about something else that soon turns out to be about the same thing anyway, so there's no point going into it. And they run into each other in the street, and she's never felt a connection between their auras the way his aura smooshing with her aura felt, rah-de-rah. And obviously they're the couple who have a love interest. They investigate Olivia's disappearance, and it takes them back to Fog Lake, and it takes them all over the place, and they fall in love over the course of their 4-day acquaintance. That is my spoiler-free recap.
Yeah.
It is your turn, Amy. What did you think of The Vanishing, and ultimately would you recommend it?
All right. Well, what I first thought I had about The Vanishing was that the blurb on the back of the Picatus hard copy edition that we read was not written by someone who read the book.
So, well, there is some, like, broad strokes, they know what happens.
Well, like, for instance, you
they
know
kind
off
of, it was written by me, because I never know who anyone's called.
Yeah, they got all the names wrong. It talks about Olivia Dayton. Her name isn't Dayton. The agency is called Lark and LeClaire, because Olivia's surname is LeClaire.
Yeah.
They call her Cat the whole time, and she makes a really big deal about not being Cat but being Catalina. And also, apparently, a scientist called Slate Trevelyan is in it. That's not a character who appears in the novel. His name is Slater Argenbright.
And the Trevelyans are a completely different character in the novel. And also, he's not really a scientist. He's a researcher.
Yeah. So what I thought I was going to read in the book was not really what the back of the book suggested.
Fair enough.
The back of the book, I thought that I was going to get half of it would be like in the past about the incident.
Yeah,
that happened.
Yeah, that's
that would
true
have been quite interesting to actually find, you know, what happened
almost
and how did
Simone
the people
St. James cut beginning, like cut between, yeah, like parallel stories.
That's,
yeah,
what I thought I would have, but it just moves continually forward in time.
Yeah,
after
no, it
the
does
prologue.
Yeah, no.
So bad form book blurb writer. Read the book first, please. Don't just skim. Overall, I would describe the vibe of The Vanishing as beige. It had a lot of expositional dialogue that was not very naturalistic. I know it's a book where everyone has auras, but you can still have,
yes,
truth within,
but
that.
But it is hard. I will say it is hard because she didn't use the tried and tested method of introducing a character who is not from that world or is new to that world, so that we can explain everything to them and therefore,
yeah, they
explain
were
it
all
us
from that world.
Yeah, they were. So it was very awkward. Some of the conversation was very awkward.
It was just like, this conversation actually hasn't led to any form of character development. And
no,
in fact, I found the whole novel to be quite like that. When they,
yeah,
talked, it was about, it was just sort of like backstory half the time, or it was very expositional. And as a result, I felt like it was more about, the focus of the novel was, where's Olivia?
Yes.
And
there was never even any. There was never any question about whether or not after we sort out the Olivia thing, are we gonna be together? That was kind of not really a question. That was like
no. Obviously, and as a result, it didn't really have any. I didn't really care too much about whether they would be together or not. I didn't want to know. Like, where was Olivia?
No, I agree.
I did sort of want to know where she was, but that was the driving tension of the book was where is Olivia? There was a little bit of what the heck is Slater's backstory, but that didn't really.
That was unsatisfying when you worked it out. But I wonder if more of that is coming in future
books. Well, maybe. So I didn't realize it was going to be that there were going to be more of them. Yeah. I sort of read it as resolved. The other thing, the pro about the book was that it was very fast paced. It was a really quick read. It is quite action packed. A lot happens. I know I don't like contemporary romance novels, but this didn't feel like it was actually set in a contemporary believable world. And as a result, I was able to remove that acknowledged bias from my reading brain. So I enjoyed how quick of a read it was.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it only took me an hour and a half. It's just action after action, after action, after action.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there just wasn't enough development and growth for me to
be invested.
Yeah, I was not invested. That's a good word. And I'm not going to read any future ones because the characters were all so beige.
Yeah.
The other thing that was interesting, but not in a I'm taking you seriously and I'm deeply engaged way was, as I was reading this book, I thought, if we were reading this together,
yeah,
like we've sometimes done with books, you read a chapter aloud, then I read the next chapter aloud,
yes.
We would have accompanied this with a drinking game. And every time they mentioned Aura,
yeah,
we would have had a drink and we would have been pissed by about halfway through chapter one because it's there. It's all the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, I think
an overused gimmick kind of thing.
I get it. They can see auras. That's fine. Then you can just say, you know, she sensed that he was uneasy. That's fine. I will assume that it's aura related. But it just was hammered in a bit too much.
Mm.
And I felt that the aura component was there as like the narrative depth and complexity rather than character development.
Yes, I would agree. And there's also a little bit of shortcutting of so them being able to read auras meant that they could read, though it's told entirely from Catalina's perspective,
but not in first person.
But the kind of implication is they know what's going on in each other's brains because they can read auras. So there was a little bit of that.
That just leaves you with purely expositional dialogue.
Yes, that's my point. That's what I'm saying to you. So the auras kind of undercut a lot of the emotional, because basically romance novels are built on a lack of being able to read another person's mind and wanting to know if what you're feeling is what they're feeling. And that's at so the there, core so of it.
There was, but whereas this you is didn't supposed have to be a romantic suspense novel.
It is, yes.
And there was no form of suspense in the romantic component of it.
No.
Because it was unnecessary by the fact that the auras were there all the time.
Yeah.
And therefore their conversation was purely expositional.
Yeah.
And it just was problematic as a reader. So I would not recommend it, which
okay.
I think is pretty clear from what I said. And I also think I'm not going to be shocked by what you're going to say about whether you would recommend this book or not.
Yeah. So my turn. Your
It's your turn. Okay. I do want to know if you read audiobook or not.
I know. So I started this book as an audiobook. And I didn't really start reading it with the intention for us to review it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I was just going on a bit of a Amanda Quick-led tangent. And I was audiobooking it while doing some kind of sewing project as normal. I started it at 1.25 speed, which is my go-to for audiobooks, so that's not anything against it. I ramped it up to 1.5 because I was finding it actually a bit slow and tedious, which was interesting that you were like, it's fast paced. I was like, oh, I felt, but audiobooks always make you like, you have to read every word with an audiobook. Whereas when you're reading something, it's much easier to skim.
Which is why I wanted a hard copy for this, because I could just go.
Yeah, really quick. And so I found Catalina really annoying as a character. I found her like slightly arrogant, maybe is the term. I don't know. She just annoyed me. And I didn't.
It's because she didn't have any growth.
Yeah, maybe that's why. I didn't particularly like Slater either. But also you never find, so presumably, because it's, even though it's the first in a series, because it is a romance novel series, we won't stay with these characters. They won't be the main characters in the next novel.
No, it'll probably be, I assume, Olivia.
Exactly. So it's going to be some other character that we've met in this novel. So for that to be the case, like what happened to Slater? By the end of the book, there's a whole big backstory about, you know, something has happened to him and is he going to be okay?
We know it.
But it's vague for it to have been a huge part of him as a character, who he is and where he is at.
Mm.
I feel like you didn't get enough answers about what happened to him. So that was, I found that problematic in terms of, I don't think I got enough information about these two people to really
care
about them.
I liked him more than Catalina, though, because at least he had an increment of growth.
It's true, and I agree with that. I felt also that they probably suffered by being the couple who were not just in charge of having their romance happen, but were also in charge of setting up this whole complicated world. So you didn't have time, potentially, to do both. And I kind of feel like maybe they didn't get a fair go because of that.
But it could have, if you'd cut back and forth, set up the world with, like, a historical, you know, Catalina's grandma or something like that, or some of the other characters who are in the novel who were older. Yeah. I think it could have been done.
Yeah, potentially. I'm not saying one more, you know what I mean? But I think that was probably part of the problem. And the other thing that I struggled with, and I think it's the problem that I have with contemporary romance, which I also don't read a lot of. And when I read contemporary novels, they're not romances.
Correct. Yes.
So I love a contemporary novel. I don't particularly enjoy contemporary romances. And I think part of the reason why I don't like it, or why I'm drawn more to romances that took place in a world that made it go slower, that made the getting to know you time and the are we in love time be slower, because their entire acquaintance in this novel, from I didn't know you existed to professing their actual love for each other, which you know is going to happen, so I don't count that as a spoiler. It's never even a question if that's going to happen. Their auras when they first meet
go gazing,
and it's never happened before, so it must mean they're blah, blah, blah. That's 3 days of novel time. And I get
and
it.
I was like, that was quick.
Yes, they again explain it away because of the aura thing, right? But then I'm like, well, then this isn't really a romance. This is like, you were made for me and I was made for you, and we know, there's no questioning it because we know it because we can see it in our auras.
And it didn't have that, there wasn't a romantic obstacle to overcome.
No, it was just that they were busy. That was the obstacle. So I felt, I always, at the end of it, I'm kind of like, maybe move in together for a little bit. Like, the obstacles that are built into a Regency novel aren't built into a contemporary one. If you like him or her and she likes him or her, there's no real reason not to just be together. Make it work. Like, it's fine.
Well, and there probably are some out there. We just haven't read them yet that have more
that's
effective.
That's very true. Please recommend us a really good
contemporary romance.
Yes, please. We'd really, really love that. 3 days was not enough for me to be like, yeah. And then even in the last chapter, again, not a spoiler because it's so such a sidebar. The romance is such a sidebar. Catalina's character is like, oh, I wonder whether he likes or dislikes some random thing. I guess we really don't know each other very well, do we? Like, less than a week then in book time after that, they're married. Like, unnecessary. Why get married? Why get married then? Like,
Well, he says, well, we're going to do it at some point. What's the difference? Do it now, do it later. Let's just do it now.
Okay. Fair enough. Anyway.
Audiobook.
So the audiobook I only read to probably the two-thirds, maybe half, on the audiobook. I wasn't enjoying the performance that was going on the audiobook because it was read by the voice that I actually think was the perfect voice for Catalina, but because I didn't like her, I didn't like listening to her voice.
Yes.
So it was a good performance, but I just didn't like the character.
But I listened to a little bit of it as well, and the narrator wasn't putting on different voices, wasn't characterizing any of the voices. She was just reading the book.
Yes, reading the book.
And that isn't what I want to get out of an audiobook.
No, and so I was finding, well, that's okay. I don't mind. Like, I would think that as a listener, I think I'm quite kind to audiobook performers because I actually just want, if someone was prepared to come to my home and sit in my sewing room and read me the book, I would do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't need an actor.
I want voices.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, voices. I'm not looking for a radio dramatized performance of the book. I just wasn't enjoying the book enough. I was like, this is taking too long and I actually don't really care. So I stopped listening to the audiobook. Then fast forward 4 days or 5 days when I'm onto something else and you and I are having coffee and you had said, oh, I'll read The Vanishing. I'm up to that book. So I'll read that now so we can talk about it on the podcast. And I remember in that moment being like, oh, she's going to expect me to finish it. Damn it. And so then I borrowed the physical copy
I've borrowed it from the library, so I'll lend it to you.
So I could read it faster than the woman would read it to me on the thing. But even so, yeah, the audiobook was fine. I just didn't like the book. So I wouldn't recommend it. And I won't read any more Jane Anne Crantz. Sorry, Jane Anne Crantz.
Well,
still enjoying my foray into Amanda Quick, though. I've gone off on tangents there that I'm enjoying.
I think I have read some of hers, and I know this is a slight tangent, but she's got a series set in like the 30s.
Yeah.
And the historical distance helps.
Yeah, it always helps, doesn't it?
But she writes that as, I think, Jane Anne Crantz, Burning Cove series.
Okay.
I just read one that was called Close Up.
Yes, I remember you reading that. Yeah. That's what we need. I need someone I trust, which is you, our wonderful readers and listeners. I need you guys as our global book club to tell us which contemporary romance to read. Great. But even if you can't do that or you don't want to, we still love you and you should tune in next week when we will bring you more spoiler-free reviews, recaps, and maybe recommendations, maybe not, of whatever we read that week. And until then,
happy reading!
And just a quick reminder here at the end of the podcast that we would love to hear from you. We want your recommendations, the good, the bad, the interesting, doesn't matter. Please reach out, send us an email at trashortreasurepodcast@outlook.com. Or we are also available at the world's most awkward Twitter handle, which Amy has to tell you about. Listen to our Twitter handle. It's the greatest.
It's @_treasure.
Doesn't that just roll off the tongue?
And with those encouraging words, tweet or email us.
We love to hear from you. Happy reading.
Cheers.